Hello and welcome to another episode of the Old Lady Speaks podcast on Black and White and Red All Over. I'm your host, Danny, coming to you for a very special episode, 55. The 55th episode coming all of about 24 hours after Italy won their first international title since the 2006 World Cup. I can't talk today. That's always good for a podcast, isn't it? So we've got a three-man crew here. Sergio is unfortunately unable to join us today, but we have the crew of Sam Lopresti, who thankfully has a voice today. Hello, Sam.
Yeah, that was there was little to nothing that I would possibly be able to have done yesterday on a podcast. I would have been rather useless. The football factory at Legends was about two-thirds English fans, but we made a hell of a lot of noise in our section, and when the last penalty didn't go in, we went nuts. I was covered in all manner of flying alcohols, and just like was hugging people that I had no idea who the hell they were. I was just like, it was a heck of a thing. It was a heck of a thing. But now I've it's one of the good parts about being a conservatory trained actor is that your voice is trained pretty well and you can bounce back pretty well. So here I am now.
A man who had no dog in the fight, unlike Sam, and I'm guessing wasn't covered in alcohol after Gianluigi Donnarumma's final PK save. Chucks, how was that drumstick, by the way?
It was a lovely dessert. Thank you. It was as lovely as yesterday's victory for Italy. And now I was very... very comfortably in my home, watching with my fiance. It was quite the occasion. So, glad to be here to talk about it.
All right. And we will obviously start with, I guess, just the emotions and the wild mood swings that was that game. And I think it's safe to say after a couple of minutes, things weren't looking so hot. But one, you had England pulling a Max Allegri and thinking a 1-0 lead is completely safe. And two, just an Italy team having, despite falling down 1-0 within a couple of minutes, having a whole lot of time to recover. So, Sam, since you, like me, had a dog in this fight, how was yesterday's viewing? And what were your thoughts on the game? And how surprised were you to see Federico Bernardeschi be the man who scored the game-winning penalty kick for Italy in a major tournament final?
Well, to answer the last one, I surprised in the sense that Jorginho missed his and made him the decisive one. After he came up and whacked in that shot in the Spain game, I was infinitely more confident when he stepped up for the fourth kick this time than I was the first time he stepped up. And that was a cold penalty too. Like basically just that's a fantastic thought process to just aim for the spot where Pickford's going to be, where Pickford's going to be last, regardless of which way he dives. I mean, there's no way you do that right. There's no way a goalkeeper can save it. But to be honest with you, you're nervous, but I was never in an all is lost kind of mode. Even, you know, Shaw comes up with that goal, but after some awful, awful marking by Giovanni De Lorenzo. I mean, he was 5 yards away from him when that cross came in, if not more. And I mean, if you're going to make a defensive mistake that huge, you might as well do it when you have 88 minutes to respond. And Italy was infinitely helped by the fact that Gareth Southgate he played into Italy's hands by, like what you said, Danny, just taking that one goal lead and backing it up. And the thing is that even if Shaw hadn't scored at that moment, it was clear that that's the way he was setting up anyway, which just seems like such a strange thing. I mean, the entire tournament, he's been far more, it's kind of turned the script on its head a little bit with what you expect out of English football, a lot like what people have talked about with Italian football, is that, you know, Italy has been attacking so much more and has been so much more free flowing and modern, instead of, you know, people just thinking Catenaccio is still a thing. Whereas, you know, in England, there was once there's a meme that I love, which is like, you know, the formations of the day in the top five European leagues. And, you know, there's four formation diagrams that are all roughly similar. And then it gets to the Premier League and it's just 11 dots in each penalty area going, sub defending, let's go. But that's very much not what Southgate was doing, which was amazing considering the attacking talents that he had at his disposal. You know, he tried to play that game. And after about 20 minutes, when Italy finally started to click into the match, from that point on, I never thought that England was going to extend their lead. And by the time Bonucci scored, most of the people in the Italy section of the bar at the factory, most of us were pretty certain that it was coming one way or the other, especially after Berardi came in and the tactical changes that got a rather useless forward off the field and a much more useful one onto it. We can get to that if we want to talk about the future of Italy a little bit later on. And everything up to and including the penalty kicks, Southgate screwed up. Because once Bonucci scored, then England was caught in between trying to defend a still ascendant Italy team and trying to have to get back into some sort of an attacking mode. And they could never get in, they couldn't really get into either one. Italy was the clear team, clearly the better team especially from halftime on up through the shootout. And then based on what I've read, Southgate basically was giving orders as to who was taking penalties and when other people were stepping up to volunteer. And specifically, I think Jack Grealish said that he had volunteered to take a penalty kick. And instead of saying, okay, go, Southgate was like, no, it's going to be Saka. And that is appalling management, because at that point, you can't go by what you've seen in training. He said his justification was that they'd been practicing penalty kicks, and he based his order and his takers on who had done really well in practice. You cannot do that, because the psychological factors of an actual shootout compared with just taking a bunch of penalty kicks during training at the end of one set, at the end of every session, are two completely different things. And to go and tell a 19-year-old child, take the fifth penalty kick in a shootout at Wembley for a country that has never, ever won shootouts, when that much pressure is on the line on this person, that's cruel. And now, granted, there's no word as to whether or not Saka also said, I want to go. But Italy kind of benefited from bad management in both of their penalty shootouts in the semifinals and the finals. Luis Enrique basically just took a hands-off approach, and like, they didn't even know who was going up next each round until they kind of just like said, I'll go. And Southgate micromanaged it, and both of those approaches failed. Whereas, you know, for Italy, with one variation, it was the exact same guys. Locatelli changing from Berardi. And honestly, even after Belotti missed his on the second round, I wasn't particularly worried. I was fairly certain England was going to miss at least one. But yeah, I mean, the emotional roller coaster was, I mean, it's a final, you know. As a Juventus fan, we know what losing finals are like, unfortunately.
Don't go any further than that.
Don't go any further than that. And on a personal level, it was also a little, it was weird being opposed to my wife in a sporting event. because we are both very unified in our fanhood in American sports. But Becky being an extreme Anglophile with actually going all the way to the Mayflower ancestry of English, this like actual verified Mayflower. It was a little, she's very much an Anglophile. And as we've discovered, we might have a little bit of some things have already maybe been decided by DNA. I haven't mentioned this on the site or the pod at all yet, but all you guys that have been in the comments who have been announcing births and forthcoming fatherhoods, I'm in your guys's community. I'm in that corner. We're expecting our first child in the end of September. During the Spain game, Becky was getting kicked like crazy.
Ow!
And then during the England-Denmark semifinal, apparently baby was very meh, and baby got very excited during the high moments for Italy yesterday. So we apparently seem to have known at least part of the DNA has won out on.
A lot of kicking like Marco Verratti on defense. That's right.
Oh, yeah. And just, hopefully in a couple of years, we won't have to deal with a teacher coming up to us and asking what our child is doing, grabbing somebody by the back of a collar and pulling them to the ground.
That definitely was like a dad pulling down his son, wasn't it?
Oh, my God. It kind of, but also just is there any more of a classic Giorgio Chiellini moment than that right there?
That's Giorgio Chiellini going, this is going to be a foul. I know it's going to be a foul. And
yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Sorry. Hey. I knew it was going to be a foul all along.
That was fantastic. And the look, there are some freeze frames where you see the look on Saka's face. He's like, what the hell is going on?
I remember the Claudio Marchisio tactical foul. You could always see it coming from about 5 seconds away before happened. But this one, I mean, you knew exactly what's going to happen. Right as Chiellini got close, you're like, no, this ain't going to end up being any good.
Oh, gosh. It's like, welcome to the big leagues, kid. But yeah, I mean, from a soccer perspective, like I said before, that I said this last week when we did our last episode, that Mancini was by far the superior tactical manager out of these two managers. And that proved very much to be so, because Southgate did not push the right buttons. And I didn't even mention before about throwing Jadson Sancho and Marcus Rashford onto the field 30 seconds before the shootout, all three of them miss or both of them miss. And then Saka. And, I do feel bad the day after. And I felt bad yesterday as well, knowing just how understanding English social media was going to be to three black kids who missed penalties for England. And that's disgusting what's going on there right now. And pretty much just English fan behavior in general, even before the game, with people breaking into the stadium without tickets and rushing the security. Apparently Roberto Mancini's son had his seat stolen by one of these guys that got in without a ticket. And also between that and the racial abuse that these poor kids have been getting. And also the video I've seen of people waiting out on Wembley's concourses, trying to take a swing at the first person in a blue shirt that they see. I mean, this may be a sweeping generalization, but I'm going to make it anyway. English fans have not gotten better since Hazel. Like, we as Juventini know what English fans are capable of because of that. And nothing is better. They've put on a better veneer for the outside world, but the wood is still rotten inside, because that is just the action is just unconscionable. And, they don't deserve nice things, which is probably why they haven't gotten any in like 60 years.
Surprisingly disagree with quite some of your thoughts, Sam, but I mean, obviously respectfully. But yeah, the tactical battle I thought was really interesting, like just as a tactical game, it was really enjoyable, actually. Just first of all, the setup of both teams, and then how it changed, how Mancini changed his tactics, and then Southgate responded to his tactics. It was just really, for the tactical enthusiast, I thought it was a very enjoyable game. And I think the funnest thing about it from a tactical standpoint is just that they were distinctly different teams from a tactical viewpoint. You know, they weren't like, yeah, they weren't just, you know, cookie cutter the same. It was, they both teams had distinctly different strengths and distinctly different weaknesses. And yeah, I mean, that was just fun. I think it was refreshing to see that. I don't really remember the last time I've seen such a just, yeah, particular tactical battle. But I actually thought, honestly, England, I thought they dominated the first half, really. I thought, yeah, contrary to what you said, I thought Southgate actually got his tactics spot on, because Italy hadn't done a thing. I mean, the first half, they really only got going, I mean, 35th, 40th minute. And then, you know, I mean, 5 minutes before halftime. But I was actually fearing for the second half, because I thought, okay, what Southgate is probably going to do is just, again, play to his strengths, which is what, you know, big physical center backs and just defenders and just a really, really big team in general. They're all very big guys and just physical guys, the English. And yeah, just play to your strengths, sit back, soak up the pressure, let them, you know, kind of like how teams play against Spain, just let them play 800 passes, but, you know, you're not getting through. Just, you know, hold that tight block. And I thought they'll do that. And I thought, you know, fair play. I would probably do the same, because it had been working in the first half. And I thought, yeah, that probably is the way to go. Ciro Immobile, as you referred to, was invisible. I mean, he was, you know, completely invisible. And I think had he played the entire 90 minutes, which thankfully not, or entire 120 minutes, I should say, which, you know, thankfully not, then I really doubt if Italy would have gotten, you know, that far, because obviously the whole switch in the game came when Berardi came on and Mancini just changed the front three. And that, I mean, that worked wonders. But I think the only thing where Southgate really kind of messed up was, I thought, you know, the blueprint for kind of a setup like that is, you know, you soak up the pressure, just two, you know, heavy blocks, defensive blocks, and then you hit them on the counter, which I thought, again, made a lot of sense. Chiellini isn't fast. Bonucci isn't fast. And, you know, you have Sterling's, you know, faster than lightning. And I thought, I was just waiting all game long. I was waiting for Sterling to just, I mean, embarrass Chiellini, just run past him and just leave him in dust. I just had the feeling that was going to happen. But I don't know. It surprisingly didn't happen. I think there were a couple of times
when it looked like he was about to, and then Chiellini just made that last move and he was in the exact right place to deflect across or to just, you know, not let him get by, which is just a testament to Chiellini's abilities, even at this age.
Yeah, true. Because, and, you know, the thing this game slightly reminded me of was the semifinal between Italy and Spain, where Italy sort of did the same thing. I mean, they really soaked up the pressure against Spain, let them play, you know, 800 passes, and then Chiesa hit them basically on the counter. I mean, Chiesa was basically the one-man counterattack, which, and that's the thing, I thought it would be that, but then Sterling doing that against Italy, because Chiesa did that very effectively against Spain, and he was always that, like, you know, in the back of Spain's mind, like, okay, we got the ball, but man, if we lose it, like, you know, we got to turn, like, we got to make sure we take care of, well, this guy speeding past us. So I thought, you know, Southgate would do that, but, and I don't know if that was just a tactical failure there, that the counter wasn't as effective, or Sterling just on a 1v1 basis, just, I don't know, didn't come off for him. I don't know, but I thought that would kind of be the blueprint there. And
I thought that was an execution failure in England's midfield, because after a while, England's midfield just wasn't able to escape.
Yeah, that's true. And but the thing is, I mean, I guess I didn't really, which, I mean, might slightly address your point, but that's again, kind of the whole thing of playing to your strengths. I didn't think that, you know, England would try and play on ball possession, because, I mean, you know, the midfield two against that midfield three is, I mean, it doesn't make sense to try and do that.
It wasn't even ball possession. It was like they were losing the ball after two or three touches to that. And that's why I say I think Southgate eventually just let Italy play too much of their game. And also to your point about, you know, when Berardi came on, as you all of a sudden had three guys in that front three who, as opposed to Immobile, who, this was the words of a guy that I was at the bar with, who just kind of that striker that kind of sits there waiting for the perfect pass. All three of the guys in that front three at that point could go and take you on and beat you one-on-one. And that's where things started to come thick and fast as the buildup came to that equalizer was that all of a sudden these three center backs were having to deal with guys that were just going to charge at them with the ball. And you saw, you know, Chiesa, that great shot that Pickford just saved, and some other opportunities up before the corner that were starting to create based on that sort of movement. And that's, I think, where what was just the masterstroke from Mancini to play that game. And which is a big thing, because that's not an Italian way to play with a false nine and just three speedy winger guys buzzing around. But it worked. Damn, it worked.
And I mean, he had to do something. I mean, because it, you know, things clearly weren't working. And that's kind of why I said that I think Southgate actually got his initial tactics right. Because I think initial tactics of England versus initial tactics of Italy, England basically were successful. Like I said, I mean, Italy were really just dulled in the first half. And then, yeah, I mean, they just struggled to really to get going and just to, you know, create any kind of chances and just any kind of threat. And then obviously that changed in the second half. But I think that the front three change was only part of the solution. I think also a pretty big part of Mancini's solution to like recovering from the very early goal was to, at least I noticed this, was to, it seemed like they were almost playing like a back three of Chiellini, Bonucci, and like Di Lorenzo. And then they pushed up Emerson like pretty high up the left flank. And then it seemed, again, from what I remember, it seemed like Verratti was sort of dropping back into almost kind of a semi-center back kind of center half position to, yeah, kind of pick up the ball from Bonucci and then, you know, spread it back, you know, wide and forward. I think that was, you know, a really big part of the solution as well, because now you had Emerson finally like pushed up closer to the front three. And whereas earlier he was kind of semi-marking Sterling, and he just wasn't able to get forward. And, you know, that obviously just impacted how well Italy were able to get forward. So I think those two changes of like switching Immobile out and then pushing Emerson further up the pitch and then going to a pseudo back three, sort of three, and then with Verratti in front of it. I think that was just, yeah, extremely well done by Mancini. Very creative and just, you know, and like I said, that's why I thought it was just such an enjoyable tactical game, because there were changes and just very unique changes that not only made like the teams think, but then also made you as fans think. Like, because I remember at one point I was seeing like Chiellini at like almost at like left wing back. I'm like, what on earth is he doing there? And I just, that was the thing that really like, you know, perked my attention, because I thought like, no, never in my life would I think I'll see Chiellini like left wing back.
I mean, that run reminded me a little bit of those, you know, when we were playing the 3-5-2 with Conte and with Max, Chiellini every once in a while would just bomb up from that left hand center back position and like, and just show up and up around the box. And you're just like, what are you doing?
That's the classic Giorgio Chiellini run, is where he just gets wild hair going. And it's like, okay, I'm going to make a 50 yard run with the ball at my feet, or, you know, pass it off to whoever's at left wing back and then make a run towards the box. And that's just kind of the uniqueness, or however you want to describe it, of Giorgio Chiellini, because for a couple of times a month, it seems like he suddenly wants to become a star forward and get all of the goals.
Yeah, that's my man.
But speaking about a star forward, I think it's pretty hard to ignore what Federico Chiesa did, not only off the bench in his first couple of appearances, but once he stepped into the starting lineup for Berardi. And obviously he was, for a large portion of the England game, Italy's only source of offense, even though he didn't get a goal. I just want to, you know, Chucks, you've obviously been mentioning him and just the impact he's had for months now, both at club and country. But what did you think of his tournament as a whole? And oh God, hopefully that injury he suffered isn't too serious, and he can come back in a few weeks after vacation and be the Chiesa we know he can be once he starts training with Mr. Allegri, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I was extremely impressed with his tournament, and I think it helped that he didn't start the first two games. Yeah, he didn't start the first two games, then he played the third, and then played part of the fourth, I believe, and then from the fifth onwards, he played. I think from memory, I think that was roughly it. So I think it helped that he kind of, you know, had a late start to the tournament. So he was able to rest and just, you know, yeah, not have too much fitness pressure on him and just, yeah, general pressure. But yeah, I mean, I thought he would be running on empty, honestly, coming into the tournament, given just how many minutes he'd played for Juventus this season. And I mean, I guess that counts for every player really in the tournament. I thought they would all be running on empty given how tough the season was. But yeah, no, Chiesa was like I referred to earlier, I think he was just so important as a direct counter threat, especially against Spain. I think that was so important against Spain because I think, like I said, without that part of the game plan, I think it would have ended up like England where, you know, you're just kind of run out of ideas and you don't really know what to do. Maintaining that counter threat was so important. And I mean, you know, I think he's really evolved out of, you know, he had that criticism of like being kind of a, you know, a headless chicken, just kind of, you know, head down and just kind of, you know, run anywhere.
We're guilty of it. We're guilty.
I mean, me too. Hell, I mean, not of that specific criticism, but like, I remember when he signed for Juve, I was like, yeah, whatever, man. I mean, Chiesa, you know, like, I remember saying basically, you know, Chiesa is obviously very good, but I thought, oh, man, you know, are we just going to sign the shiny object again? And well, yeah, I mean, he shines very brightly. but yeah, no, I mean, clearly just extremely standout player. I mean, he's been great. And just adding that aspect to his game of not just being run, but actually being run and like thoughtful action and actually, you know, an end result, like a useful end result. That's been incredible. And, you know, he's only getting better. So, you know, let's keep him and let's, you know, praise him to the heavens.
Yeah, this definitely was his star turn. This is the first potential step on him becoming a true superstar in the game for Italy and for Juve. And of course, immediately you see a report like yesterday morning where Julian Nagelsmann, the new coach at Bayern, is like, oh yeah, I'd love to have him. And I'm like, no, you do not get him. No one gets him. He's going to be a building block at Juventus for a very, very long time. But yeah, I mean, there's so few words that haven't already been said about the way he's played. Just having that willingness to just go at a guy and make something happen, which, you know, a lot of the time in Italy, you know, in Italian teams past, you just didn't have, you know, like 3 years ago when we were watching Giampiero Ventura's team just slogging at this yellow wall of yellow shirts that was the Swedes, there was nobody on the field to do that. It was just cross after cross after cross, lobbing at a bunch of huge, tall Swedes and hoping that one of them would mess up marking one time, as you know, to the point where, you know, Mancini's been rightly praised for his substitutions all tournament. And then you remember Ventura in that Sweden game telling Daniele De Rossi to warm up when Italy needed a goal. And De Rossi cursing him out on the bench, saying, what the heck, you know, che cazzo entro io, and pointing at Lorenzo Insigne, who was sitting on the bench.
How far they've come.
And that is the thing. And I think that Chiesa and, you know, is emblematic of just how far they have come with that. You know, now you have this side that is not just willing to pass the ball side to side and cross. They, you know, this is a team that is moving with that, and they pass with purpose and they move with purpose. And, you know, if they can find a striker that is more productive, more consistently productive in the big games, because I don't think it's Immobile, not at the international level. He's great at Lazio. He's great. He scores all the goals at Lazio. When he pulls on the other shade of blue, it's not the same player. I I look towards guys like, you know, maybe it's time to start matriculating Moise Kane into the senior team again and seeing what he does. It looked like that year at PSG made him grow up a bit. You know, if Raspadori continues to really develop at Sassuolo, maybe it's time to see him start in that striker spot a little more, because that is the thing that this team is really, really lacking. The difference, as opposed to Spain, who, you know, came out in the quarterfinals and also did not have a really reliable goal scorer out of their number nine position. Morata, you know, not quite doing it. Moreno, not quite doing it. Is that this team was able to spread that load. You know, there were so many parallels to the 2020, with the 2021 team to the 2006 team. You know, a lot of different goal scorers. Nobody scored more than twice, but Italy still tied the record, the Italian record for most goals at a major tournament. So, you know, the team play won out, but you can elevate that team play even more if there's somebody more consistent in the middle of that front line who can really produce for the national team.
I don't know how many times throughout this tournament I just said, God, how much of a difference does a competent and functional midfield make for a team? And this is obviously the last 2-3 years of Juventus talking, but you look at, and I remember I said this on this podcast when Juventus lost to Inter the first time, you have pieces that fit together and you have, obviously, you know, you're playing for a national team, so you have a larger pool of players to choose from. But you look at just how well Jorginho and Verratti and Barella and Locatelli, and I mean, throw in the other couple guys who didn't play as much, Cristante and whatnot. But those three main guys, just they complemented each other so well. And Barella, you know, he struggled towards the end of the tournament a little bit. But God, what a difference a midfield that makes sense makes, other when you compare it to, say, I don't know, a Juventus midfield.
Well, hope and here's hoping that the Juventus midfield will have at least one of the elements of the Italian midfield on display next season, because if they do manage to get Locatelli, I mean, you can tell that really is, because the other midfielders on Juventus can play the Verratti and Barella roles on either side, but there isn't the Jorginho, and Locatelli can do that. He's proven that, I think, over the last few years at Sassuolo, and he proved that over the first couple of games as well when he was starting in place of Verratti. Even though Jorginho was the nominal regista, Locatelli was making regista passes out of a mezzala spot, you know, that the first goal that he scored against Switzerland with the pass that he put on Berardi and then he finished the move himself when Berardi squared it back to him. And that's, and like you said, Danny, it's what we've been saying for a long time now. Juventus has players that are supremely talented in this midfield. They just don't go together. And Mancini and the team as a whole, especially when Spinazzola was healthy, it all meshed together into something that is much greater than the sum of its parts. I was reading an ESPN like roundup of the tournament, like a roundtable type thing with all of their main soccer guys. And Gab Marcotti was quick to point out that he didn't believe that Italy had a true superstar on the team, at least from an attacking point of view. And I think that's mostly accurate. I think guys like Chiesa could very well end up at that level at some point. But even when you do have that level of player on your team, you're only going to get where you want to go if you make that team even greater than the sum of its parts, even if those parts are really, really good already, by having that right mix. And that's exactly what Mancini did. And that's what and that's what brought this championship to Rome.
A beautiful note to end on.
Right. A lot better the way that Leonardo Bonucci singing sounded. I'll give you that. So, anyways, on that note, we'll wrap things up here. We didn't have Twitter questions this week, but when we do resume next week, which, by the way, will be when Juventus officially start training for the 2021-22 season. So we got that to look forward to. You can send it to us at Juventus Nation on Twitter. You can also follow us there or on Facebook. Search Black and White and Red all over. As always, you can follow us on your favorite podcasting platform, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. Search Black and White and Red all over there. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, feel free to rate us, leave us a review, say all the nice things that you want. So for Sam, for Chucks, and for the missing in action Sergio Romero, this is Danny saying thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
It's coming, Rome!